Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
All right, gearheads, welcome to the show. We're so excited on this amazing race day, and we're going to be live from Monaco because we have Les Kaiser and Kate Walker out in Monaco. This is John Massengill sitting in studio with Jonathan Green. How's it going, buddy?
Ah, loving it. It's the big Sunday.
It's the big Sunday. So we just had the Monaco Grand Prix, and of course, we're going to have the Indy 500, and we're also going to take your calls today at 512-643-LIVE, and we already have a caller. We've got Daniel on the line.
Hi there. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Where are you calling from?
McChesney Park, Illinois, Northern Illinois.
All right, cool.
All right. How's the weather up there?
A little bit gloomy today. Of course, it's a holiday weekend, so that means rain all weekend long. So that's usually what we're staring at.
I think when you say Illinois, I'm thinking, well, you're not that far from Indiana, and that'd be the same sort of weather around the Indy 500. So just check it in.
Yeah, I think they're going to be braced for a long day, too.
Yeah.
I think Lewis drove a sterling race, but I think today you saw Lewis's kind of weaknesses where he starts, once something kind of gets in his head, he starts to obsess over it. And I think it almost cost him the race at one point because Max got really close until the team kind of said, you know, hey, you know, calm down, you can do this. You know, everyone's kind of struggling. And I think Max just rode him the whole race.
You know, I think he's so bulletproof as a driver, but you're right. That is the only time you see weakness. One of the commentators said, you know, was he just posturing just to try to kind of get the other teams to think he was in trouble? And I don't think so. I think you're right. I think it is a weakness. I think he gets emotional and I think he needs calming down. He kind of needs that mental hug, as I call it, to get him over the line. But, you know, he's just did an interview saying I wasn't going to stop, I wasn't going to come in, but I mean, if you listen to him for an hour and a half, that's all he wanted to do.
He was just looking for them to say, okay, you know, come in. But you know, I think you're dead right. He was looking for just that mental validation of, you know, I'm not the only one struggling with this. And that's kind of like the only real knocks that you can say is he starts getting something in his head. And I don't want to say dramatic, but he just almost obsessed over it. He sees the tire looking, you know, less than perfect, and you know, oh my god, I need to get off these tires. And it kind of takes the team kind of saying, hey, you know, everyone's struggling, or, you know, you can do this. You know, it's Monaco. There's next to nowhere to pass. And then he kind of calms down and gets on with it.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And I mean, he also knew that Max was going to do one of two things. He was either going to try that move that he did and crash them both out, or, you know, he was going to pass him and still lose the race because he had a 5-second penalty and everybody knew that.
Yeah.
So it was odd, really, in some ways.
And it, like one of the commentators said, the engineer should have just come back on the radio and said, look, you can pit if you want, but you're going to come back in fifth place.
Yeah.
You want to try to win the race, then stay out there.
Yeah, and I think that's where, I don't want to say it's a weakness with the team, but they do, you know, Mercedes kind of works how how Ferrari did back in, you know, Michael Schumacher's reign, where there wasn't any drama. It was just cool, calm, collected. You hardly ever saw a facial expression out of John Todt, even though he would bite his nails the whole time and had to wrap his fingernails in Band-Aid to keep from biting them. Whereas now Mercedes has kind of taken over that, you know, cool, calm, collected. We don't show emotion, even when you have Lewis having like a pseudo meltdown. and you see Ferrari now just flailing, and it's they need, you know, for, I think Ferrari really needs someone to kind of calm them down, but Mercedes is just absolutely where Mercedes or Ferrari was during Michael Schumacher's, you know, time at the absolute top. It's really just swapped.
I know, and it's interesting that you mentioned, and obviously you're a long-time follower of Formula One. It is sad to see Ferrari capable of winning, and you only have to go to free practice 3, which I always look at as being a sort of template to what the race is going to hold. And there's Leclerc, the fastest guy out there. And then, you know, frankly, Vettel did save some blushes by getting on the podium. But really, where are Ferrari? What's happened?
I think really Vettel's salvage is the only real respectability that Ferrari can take out of this race. Mm. If I was Ferrari, I would call this a building year, throw it away, and just let the young, you know, I don't want to say inexperienced, but the young team they have, just throw everything at the wall for a year. You figure in years past, they were close to the championship. They had good mechanical grip, almost better than Mercedes, because they could always make the tires work better for longer, but they always struggled on the aero side. Whereas Mercedes were really good on the aero, decent on the mechanical, even though the car was super balanced. And now Ferrari went with this low drag concept, which means they have no downforce anywhere else. And they're struggling on the mechanical side. So you just see, you know, Leclerc and Vettel sawing so hard at the wheel, working so much harder than, you know, basically say, okay, you know, here's your crisis. You basically designed the wrong car. Now you have the rest of the season. Get it right so that going into the winter next year, we're back on the page that we should be going for downforce, because they do almost have an edge on the engine side. So if you can pile downforce onto the car, you have the engine to push it through. So you give the designers a year to kind of build and work and get their feet wet with a crisis, saying, okay, now we got to fix it. And then it gives Leclerc the rest of the year to get settled into the team, because, you know, there is no doubt that kid is going to be a stud. And the problem that they're having is, I think he's coming in, he's thinking, okay, you know, I got to, you know, I'm in Ferrari, I have to produce. And Ferrari's kind of screwed him a couple times this year, putting Vettel over him, quite obviously, when they shouldn't be. And sometimes you got to tell Vettel, hey, man, like, go faster. Either go faster or Leclerc's going to drive you this whole race.
Yeah.
And I think if they did, it would push Vettel harder, because he just can't assume that he's going to be the number one. So I think you give the designers and Leclerc a year to grow. Just call it a building year. And I think, you know, the guy at the head of Ferrari now, whose name I just forgot, has been saying, what is his name?
Benotti.
Okay, yeah, he's actually been uncharacteristically transparent in saying, you know, hey, you know, we just think we were the wrong concept, which you would never hear Ferrari say. You'd always say, well, we're looking at the data, you know, we'll make adjustments. He's saying, hey, we just basically designed the wrong car. And he's saying, you know, we're going to get on top of it, which is a breath of fresh air out of a very opaque Ferrari.
You know, Daniel, I want to ask you something. You know, we've been talking about a long time about how to grow the sport in the United States. And, you know, with the resurgence of Indy right now and a lot of great competitive racing, what do you say to a new Formula One fan after watching a race today with Hamilton driving slow, processional, not that much excitement? What do you say to fans to try to keep them engaged right now?
Well, Formula One has never really been accessible to the new fan. And if I was going to have a new fan watch a race, it would not be Monaco by any means, because all of the worst things about Formula One are on display. You know, it's basically, you had Max Verstappen, he's going to be drawing pictures of that Mercedes in his mind all night. Yeah, he's going to wake up and it's just going to be like one of those psychological movies where it's just going to be, the walls are just going to have pictures of the back of Mercedes on it all day. And you know, it's not accessible. Basically, it kind of fits a elitist, for lack of a better word, image where you always have to be, like, you know, super well off to go to the races. They don't make it really accessible unless you're there, where they do like fan interview, where like the fans get some Q&A and all that. Mm. Whereas IndyCar has actually done, I think, a better job of being more accessible, you know, getting the fans involved, making the drivers accessible, because you have these drivers that, you know, in Formula One, where they don't like to do interviews. And I think one of the best ones, ironically, for interviews and just putting in front of the crowd is Kimi, because while Kimi is very clammed up in front of a camera, you get him away from a camera and just around a microphone joking around, or especially if you give him a beer, I'm sure, you will have the best day of your life listening to him.
Yeah.
Very true. Will you be joining us in November for the F1?
I do not have the money it takes to be down there for it, otherwise I definitely would.
Well, stay tuned closer to the race. You never know. We're often giving the odd ticket away. So stay tuned.
All righty. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling, Daniel. Appreciate it.
Makes some very valid points.
Yeah. Daniel knows his sport. Yep. For sure. Hey, you know what? I think we have, producer says, yes, we have Les Kaiser and Kate Walker live from Monaco. Hey, guys. Are you guys there?
Absolutely. And the ever repressible queen, Kate Walker, is with me. Kate, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. We're on my favorite balcony in Monaco. We're just overlooking Raskas. We can see all of the skid marks from the various spins left over the tarmac. And far too many overpriced people with champagne and skimpy clothes on a balcony just over the way.
I did not notice them.
That's
thanks
awesome.
Thanks for pointing that out, Kate.
That's the whole point of Monaco.
Yeah.
Visual imagery. We're on a balcony. We're the only two people out here. We're standing real close to each other. I kind of feel like royalty with you.
Absolutely. And if the snappers get us from the wrong angle, it might look like we're kissing because we're sharing a microphone.
Okay, that's a visual image not many people want.
Oh, it's all glamour here. You never know. Monaco Grand Prix, champagne, caviar, shared microphones.
There you go.
Kate, how are you? We miss you.
Oh, I've missed you guys. I've been really good. Done my usual 18 kilometers a day in 5-inch heels, because that's just how I roll at the Monaco Grand Prix.
Good girl.
Yeah. Me too.
Well, you should be borrowing my shoes, you see.
Yeah, fair enough.
Cowboy boots.
I actually have to say, I thought that was a bloody good race for Monaco. We normally have a parade, and okay, it started with, you know, finished almost as it started, but I lost some nails. I didn't go full Jean Todt. You don't need to strap my fingers up, but there was quite a lot of tension, I thought, especially in the last 20 laps, and we didn't know if Lewis was going to be able to hang on.
Yeah, it's a good
point. I
think
mentally, you're saying. I think we saw some mental pressure. And, you know, I don't know that it was posturing. I think he was really sweating it coming into the end there.
I mean, he's always been a guy, I'm with you on the mental cuddle. He's somebody who does wear his heart on his sleeve, and he needs to feel in the right place if he's going to deliver. And yeah, there was no way practically he was going to come in. We all know the maths. But I think he just needs to vent sometimes. You know, he's a bit like a kettle. You have to blow off steam and then you can get on with the job at hand. But you just need to vent first.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that, I actually think that they've got the balance right, which they didn't have at McLaren. That McLaren situation with him and Alonso really didn't go in Hamilton's favour. And he was very lucky, I think, that year to have got through it, because he was actually falling apart. And Alonso's much mentally, I think, much more strong. And we just sort of saw what he did at Indy and how strong he can be mentally. And I think now Mercedes have got, with Bottas and the combination, right where Hamilton needs to be to do what he needs to do.
Hey, you know, you mentioned Fernando Alonso. Here in the media center, there was rumors about what he's doing today. Did you hear what he's doing today?
Tell us.
Catching a matinee movie.
Certainly not drinking any milk, that's for sure.
What's the movie? How the West Was Won?
I don't know.
Or just Gone with the Wind.
Coming to America.
Yeah, coming to America. Gone with the Wind is a sequel.
Again.
I love it.
Hey, all right. So you know, we heard John Massengill talking about Leclerc. Ignore the radio. Push hard. Dude, I think he took your advice.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, you may be right.
I am.
Yeah, and you know, Jonathan called it before the race. He was saying, you know, Leclerc's just gonna just drive like a madman, and he did, and he kind of had to. It's his home race. He was back there. What else is he gonna do?
You know, an overtake at Rascas is iffy at best, and he tried it twice.
And the first one was beautiful. I mean, we have to give him credit for that. That pass on Roman was deft, precise, perfect.
Yeah. Oh, it really was. And folks, like I said, we're standing right above Rascas, and it is tight. I mean, I can't imagine at race pace doing this. I can't imagine passing somebody in a streetcar, you know, two Fiat 500s will elbow themselves getting through this turn at speed.
But we've got three trucks in front of us, all with cranes on the back because they're clearing the circuit. It's not three trucks wide.
Yeah. There you go. It's something else. But absolutely, what about the Bottas Verstappen dance in pit lane? Verstappen, wow, that cost him and haunted him the rest of the race.
Mm-hmm.
Probably cost Bottas a new race suit as well.
Yeah.
It was damned if you do, damned if you don't. And when you see it from the driver's eye point of view, from Verstappen's point of view, it's so hard to see anything. I mean, you know, safe release or unsafe release, it's really hard to do a safe release when everybody's coming in.
And you follow the instructions your team gives
Correct.
You. They're the spotters. They're supposed to be your eyes. And it's a really, really tight pit lane. And it's the narrowest one and the longest one. Well, maybe not physically the longest, but it feels long because it's so skinny. And it's full of hangers on during the race. You've got various VIPs who are trying to sneak their way on when they're not supposed to. It's a hectic place.
Yeah, no question. Kate, you've always got your finger on the pulse. What is the state of Formula One as we reach you in Monaco? There's been team principal meetings. Monaco is always a sort of definition time. What's going on?
Well, at the moment, we are in the last 2 weeks before everything seems to go to pot. And 30th of June is the official deadline for sorting out the next bunch of regulations for 2021 and onwards. We're not anywhere near actually having anything agreed. Everything that we thought was going to be agreed, like spec parts and gearboxes and so on, that seems to have been ditched for cost-saving purposes. But the real problem is all of our new regulations have to be discussed at the World Council meeting on the 14th of June and then ratified by the 30th. So we've got 16 days in which to get this right. And what we're thinking, you know, this is Formula One. We've been here before. We're going to have some sort of extension. Things will get ratified at the World Council meeting in December. And the poorer teams are going to be on the back foot because they haven't got the money to throw at the new regulations. It's all same old, same old. We've got new owners and the same old story.
All right, well, hey, guys, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back after these messages with Les Kaiser and Kate Walker live from Monaco.
Hey, beer people, it's Christine Sellis.
And I'm Daytona.
Sellis Brewery is back in Austin and brewing again.
Oh, Sellis doesn't ring a bell for some of you?
Well, for the last 17 years, we've been crafting the perfect comeback. We've returned to our roots with Sellis White, a famous local favorite.
Plus, we're creating some fresh new brews.
And whether it's the first time you've tasted our family's legendary beer,
or the millionth,
we're thrilled to be back.
Swing by your local store, watering hole, or our brewery, and let's catch up over beers.
Sellis, Austin's original craft brewery.
Grandpa, what do you call this thing again?
It's a 66 Ford Bronco.
I think you got ripped off.
Why is that, honey?
It's got no Wi-Fi, no USB port, no Bluetooth.
Exactly. I guess we'll just have to talk.
Sometimes the best way to connect is to disconnect.
Is that the window button?
It's called a window crank.
Cool. The faster I move it, the faster it goes down.
This moment of escape was created by Hagerty.
Being old is kind of cool, Grandpa.
Works for me.
For people who love cars.
Talk 13.7, the right choice.
Hello, I'm Felipe Massa, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. We just got through with the Monaco Grand Prix, and Lewis Hamilton wins the race. And pretty much start to finish, he did battle quite a bit with his tires. And behind him was Max Verstappen, Sebastian Vettel, Valtteri Bottas, Pierre Gasly, Carlos Sainz, Daniel Kvyat, Alex Albon. And, you know, those guys had a great race. I mean, finishing 7 and 8.
Yeah, just, and of course, Verstappen not finishing on the podium because of that 5-second penalty.
Yes, yes, that's correct. And,
Albon, is, I think Albon's had a breakout weekend.
Yeah. And, you know, those guys, they looked good all year and really kind of been battling best of the rest with Haas just as much as anybody.
There's three really good stories out of the obvious. You know, you talk about Ferrari, Mercedes, fine. But there's actually some really, Gasly, very good weekend. Yep. Kvyat, very good weekend. And Albon.
All right, well, let's go back out to Les Kizer and Kate Walker out live at Monaco. And go ahead, Les.
Yeah, speaking of Kvyat, he actually had the fastest lap for a while, if you didn't catch that. That was shocking, and I think he earned a stripe today, so very pleased to see that. He made the comment of, I think I get a point. And they said, well, you better keep it up. And I don't think he did.
No, in the end, it was Gasly who got it because he went in at the end, put the new tyres on with a 30-second gap behind. So I think he said two in a row. 14.2 or something was his top one. I can't remember.
That's good.
I think that fastest lap point is stirring up some excitement well beyond the front pack. The in the Formula 1.5 group, if you will. And
B series.
I think it's a great thing to have. You know, it gives the teams that are capable of a single or a couple of fast laps a chance to get on the tally board and stay in there.
And if you look, it's not even just the middle teams that are doing it. Today, Valtteri, when he dropped 7 seconds in a lap towards the end of the race, you're thinking, what's going on here? Has Valtteri got a problem? And then he starts going purple, purple, purple. You realize that he'd deliberately given himself that 7-second gap in order to build up the traffic to get the fastest lap, which he was doing on some pretty old hard tires. It was only when Gasly came out freshly shod that he had it taken away from him.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, Kate.
So even the big boys care.
Hey, I want to see if you guys heard one of my favorite team radio from the entire race was Jonathan, I see you smiling.
Verstappen.
Well, I stepped out of the room and came back when you were talking about Verstappen. What exactly did they say?
Well, his engineer came on and said, Max, you got three choices. Basically, do what you're doing. We've been given a 5-second penalty. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Secondly, you can stay where you are, or you can come in and pit and we'll take it the 5-second penalty there. And he goes, and the last choice is you could just overtake Hamilton, take the win, and race off into the distance in glory, which I thought was great.
He says, I'll leave it up to you, mate.
I'll leave it up to you, mate.
That is smart management. Yeah, that is smart management. And it's your choice. Here are the selections.
Yeah,
it's
you like talk about looking after Hamilton's emotions. That's the way to deal with Max. Give him everything on the smorgasbord. Here's the menu, buddy. Off you go.
He just wants every option to involve some sort of a fight. That's the that's the Verstappen way.
Yep.
Hey, Kate, I want to ask you something else. You being in the middle of all of this circus every week, you know, we mentioned the rules 2021, the rules that are going to change Formula One pretty dramatically, we all hope, in some different ways. But what are the sticking points that you're hearing across the teams right now? What do you think that's going to prevent them to trying to come to some consensus?
Well, one of them is the spec parts. So, you know, they were talking about taking certain bits, certain components that we don't necessarily see, like gearbox internals and brake pedals and what have you, and making those things spec so that teams could buy them off a single supplier. Well, when it comes to the brake calipers, for example, McLaren, if you have a look at their list of sponsors and partners, they have quite a few technical partners like Dell, where they're not actually earning any money from the deal. The only real paying partners that McLaren has right now are two Japanese companies that do brakes and brake calipers. And so McLaren is doing their best to put a kibosh on anything to do with spec brakes, because if their partners don't win the tenders, then McLaren is losing some of the only sponsors that they've got. And one of the rumors that was doing the rounds announced this weekend in Monaco, and I have to stress this is a rumor, but I really hope it's not true, is that finances of the team are now so bad that they're actually selling off the old Senna cars secretly.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we were told in Barcelona 2 weeks ago that we're no longer media are no longer welcome in McLaren for food or drink because they can't afford to feed us.
Whoa! Wow, that's scary.
So no cigars on a Saturday then.
No cigars on a Saturday then.
No more champagne either. I mean, I remember we used to get champagne in McLaren whenever Lewis got a pole back in 2011. You know, those days are very long gone.
And yet they still have one of the most impressive trailer suites in the paddock.
Well, yeah. They paid for it back when they were winning.
Yeah.
Well, it begs the question, what are they doing, you know, in the middle of, Indianapolis, failing to even be in the race? So anyway, that's a whole, we could talk about that forever. But Kate, what does that mean for
Going
Haas?
To the matinee movie. We already discovered that.
What does that mean for Haas, though, in terms of specs? In terms of spec parts, then, how does the Haas team either come out favorably or unfavorably in the new rules?
Oh, well, it depends what the new rules are. But, I mean, in theory, Haas should be just, if we don't get the common parts, then Haas will continue to have the same advantage they've had over the last couple of years of benefiting from the expertise with Ferrari. And it's if we do get these spec parts through, then the whole, in theory, everybody's going to be on the level playing field. So really, teams like Haas want to keep the situation as it is now because they have a micro advantage because they're working with a team who's got double data.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, this is going to be really fascinating to see how all of these things play out. You know, and you talk about spec parts. You know, there's even been rumors of a spec front wing. You know, not all of the aero, but, you know, thinking about all the money that's spent in Formula One and how much of that is spent on aero, right? How much of that budget is CFD and all that? So what about, have you heard
it's
anything?
It's also the manufacturer. I know. I was talking to one of the mechanics at Racing Point last night, and they were telling me that every time Lance Stroll breaks something, it's 1,000 man hours to rebuild a front wing because everything is done by hand. And the Strolls have got enough money that they don't really care about the financial cost of Lance going through 3 front wings every weekend, but the factory is not physically capable of keeping up with his hit rate.
Oh wow!
it all gets a bit weird. That's the problem. I mean, you have all these that you've got tens of millions over the course of a season in terms of costs when it comes to wind tunnel time, CFD modelling, the expertise that you're hiring in. But if you think making each of these front wings takes 1,000 man hours in the factory because you're layering carbon fibre and then things are hand painted because you can't do stickers because that means you've got a lip so the aero is affected. Yeah, even the smallest component is a haute couture piece of kit. You don't buy anything off the shelf. Well, we might do from 2021, but these days you certainly don't.
Interesting. I guess go ahead, Glaz.
No, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just want to ask about the elephant in the room. Kate, your take on Ferrari and Binotto and the failure of this team to again effectively have a winning car and not be able to win in it.
Broken for them, really, because both at the launch and in pre-season testing, they were carrying themselves the confidence that you've not seen before, and they really thought that they had something. And you've got what's the shame is you've got a really good group of people there. I mean, after a few years of closed-door policies and then basically treating the rest of the paddock like words we can't say on a family show,
scum.
You all of a sudden, yes, scum. That's a good one.
They didn't even do press conferences, right? They wouldn't allow the press in.
They dropped that last year. Whereas this year, they've got a new head of communications. She's actually the old woman from McLaren, and she's wonderful. And we've had 3 technical briefings with Binotto this week alone. I mean, they hauled everybody in and explained why they messed up the strategy, and they explained what went wrong with qualifying. And they do a mea culpa. And what's great is they're finally creating an atmosphere where people can try stuff and make mistakes and not get overly punished. But like you were saying earlier, they need to just throw everything at the wall, consider this a learning and growth year, and come out fighting later on. I think that's the best that they can hope for.
Hey, guys, let's have somebody join the conversation because we had a caller call in. We've got we got Andy P. Hey, Andy, how's it going, man? What'd you think?
Good morning. How's your Super Sunday going?
Super. A little early, but it's, you know, we're getting there. I'm waking up now.
Good.
Well, hey, you got Les and Kate also in live in Monaco as well.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess I can ask my question to Les. So did you find a microphone and do a meow? Did that come through on the mics today?
Hey, you know what, Les Kaiser? That's a really good point.
Wherever Les goes.
Well, the meow meow guy's only been in where Les is. He was at Coda when Les was there, and now he's in Monaco when Les was there. Les, we're thinking that Andy thinks it was you.
Oh, well, I'd like to say so, but I can't lie like that.
So, Andy,
we've all got to keep our secrets.
Come on, Andy. We've got one of the top journalists in Formula One on the line. What's your question? Come on.
So, my thought on today's race was, you know, and Kate, I just heard you kind of mention it, how good the tension was kind of up and down the grid today. And I think that kind of really leads to a great race, not necessarily the amount of necessarily overtakes that you have, but the potential for it. You had, you know, 50-odd laps there with Verstappen right on Hamilton's gearbox.
Yeah.
So what's kind of your opinion? Is it more just, do we want to see flat more overtaking? I think that would help. Or do we just need to see more tension in the sport?
No, for me, it's definitely the tension. I mean, if you see a great pass, fantastic. But there's a big difference between what Leclerc did to Romain today at Rascasse and going past a guy six times with DRS on a straight. You know, and so you want to see, and it's the near misses
are
as exquisite as the hits. And what I loved about today's race was the number of times that Max was so close into Nouvelle Chicane. You go, that's what I want. I want the gasp and the shock and the who's going to do it. Whether or not they do it is, well, that's another bonus.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I agree. Andy, it's a great question. And any other thoughts from today's race? Andy, we got about a minute before the break.
My other take on it was that the midfield battle this year is so close. I wish we would have seen more of it, you know, from the TV coverage. You had between Haas and McLaren and Renault and Toro Rosso. And hey, fair shout out to Honda Power getting their
action. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, if we could only translate that a little bit to the top six, boy, would we have a show.
Yeah, that's a good point. Andy, well, thanks for calling in, man. We appreciate you as usual. And we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, and apologize to Andy if he got drowned out a little bit by this noise that was here. Lewis Hamilton was on top of a minivan driving by. I don't know if there wasn't room inside, but he came cruising by. But, hey, you know, speaking of Yamaha, Kate, tell us about this connection.
Herbie Blash, the old FIA guy, is now doing Yamaha stuff for MotoGP, and he's here this weekend saying hello to all of his old friends. I thought it was a nice little link. So we've got a little bit of Yamaha in the Monaco paddock this weekend.
Awesome.
I love it.
I love our sponsor, yeah.
And that's a great appointment, too, for Yamaha. Really good.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, guys. We got to take a quick break, and we'll be back after some quick messages.
When we see a beautiful car pass by, we always seem to use a hand signal. The classic thumbs up, the point and shoot six gun finger, the hang loose thumb and pinky combo. If you've ever flashed one of those, now there's a car club for you. Introducing the Hagerty Drivers Club with exclusive members only events, insight on buying and selling, the Hagerty magazine, and roadside service. The Hagerty Drivers Club gives you a big thumbs up. So keep flashing those fingers.
Same to you.
Just not that one. Join the Hagerty Drivers Club at Hagerty.com today.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride. Or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Jenny Gow from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. Amazing weekend, Monaco Grand Prix, Indy 500. And with, let's talk about the Indy 500 right now, because it was an incredible race. And Simon Pagenaud continues his streak in May. He won the Indy Grand Prix. He had the amazing qualifying. And today's race, Simon Pagenaud and Alexander Rossi, that was an epic battle at the end of the race. And we all knew what was coming. We knew that somebody was going to be behind and use the aero to come around and win. And I didn't know if Rossi was going to be able to pull it back off, and he did not. And Simon Pagenaud continues his May, his fantastic May. And I believe that's his 13th win, but his first Indy 500 win. And, you know, for a driver like him, popular driver, fantastic finish, and just a great race. But there's so many stories in the Indy 500 today, with Colton Herta crashing out early, or not crashing, but with his mechanical out early, and amazing rookie to watch him. And with the other, you know, Connor Daly finishing his 10th, Santino Ferrucci finishing 7th, incredible race for him. And it was really one of the best Indy 500s in a long time. I was really excited to watch that. And we were going to get Simon Pagenaud on the show today after the race, but we're not going to be able to get him before we go on air. So we'll probably catch up with him Monday or Tuesday, and we'll put that out on our SoundCloud account. But let's go ahead and let's step back to the Monaco Grand Prix for just a minute, because Les Kayser was out there, as you know, and he caught up with Andy Stobart. And Andy is a former press officer for the Renault team for about a dozen years, Lotus and Renault. And he caught up with Andy and talked really interesting conversation about the complexity and the history of Monaco, and why it's beyond just the glitz and glamour and splendor of Monaco, but the other challenges of that race. So let's go ahead and play that clip with Les Kayser and Andy Stobart.
All righty. We have been talking about all the different things that make Monaco special. Some of the items make it difficult, though. Can't have a better resource than Andy Stobart. Andy, explain some of the obstacles that teams deal with here in Monaco.
Monaco is unique. I mean, you hear that so many times, but it is true. And just look at the location we're in, and the harbour, and the fact that the teams are all based around this little inlet, this tiny principality where the rich live, and the super rich, it's tax-free living and all that kind of thing. But cramming a Formula One team, a Formula One operation, temporary building, temporary garages that are built up around, and then the team motorhomes, you've seen how big they are.
Oh, yeah.
There's not enough space for them, and there's literally not enough space for them, to the extent that Red Bull have to float theirs on a pontoon.
I saw that. There are engineering plans going on here that just amaze me. But it's actually, the team typically is in several locations based on what they're doing. The garages are one place, the paddocks in another, the press buildings are everywhere.
You can't put it all together like you would. It is a street course, so we see different places, and it's a tremendously historic location. The race has been happening here for many, many, many years.
90 years this year.
Exactly. So Monaco's a tiny principality. They can't, knock some buildings down and create a custom built paddock or anything like that. So you've got to work with the resource you have. As we look over the harbour now, we can see there's buildings fashioned around trees. We can see parties going on in the boats and harbour.
Why aren't we invited to those? Don't you know people?
We could go next, Les. I think that could be the next stop on our agenda this evening.
To give you an idea, folks, that is really interesting. So I saw the end of some of the press conferences, and Max goes out, jumps in a ski boat, and they go taking off through the harbor to deliver him wherever his next location is. even though it might be 1 mile by road, in some cases you can't get there from here because of all the blockages.
Yeah, because a vital part of where you'd get around the road system is being used by a racetrack, and it's not advisable to have two pedestrians and mopeds going around when the race cars are using it. Monaco's a very challenging place to get around, even by foot, because there's a lot of relief to it. So there's a lot of hillsides.
There is.
So the more you come here, you get to know the secret. They're not secret, but you get to know the insider information of which lifts you can use. So some public lifts are available. You can get to different places. Of course, when it comes to the Grand Prix time, some usual routes get closed off. And I remember I used to find with the team, some mornings you could go in one route and you think you've got a brilliant shortcut. Then on Saturday morning it's closed, so you've got to find a different way. You find a different way. Then on Sunday morning that different way is closed. So it's a real big challenge to get around. And
there's a good example. Yeah, there we go, a M Series BMW, not exactly stock, and you see everything imaginable on the streets here.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a tiny place, so a lot of people, you see a tremendous amount of mopeds. Equally, you see a tremendous amount of Lamborghinis. So it's from one extreme to, you know, from Lambretta to Lamborghini.
There you go. So, you know, the thing that everybody has seen those pictures, and we've shared similar, of the view from the top of the hill looking down to the harbor, and these giant mega yachts truly are bow to stern, side to side. It's almost paved in yachts in some of these areas. It's amazing what turns out here. And everything about the environment is extremely lavish, extremely boastful. I have no other word.
It's not a subtle place. It's certainly not a subtle place come Grand Prix weekend. It's not a shy, retiring violet on the F1 calendar.
Absolutely not. But you know what? It is one of the crown jewels of the season. And I got to say, it's beyond anything I expected. And it's just something else. From an operations standpoint, did you enjoy coming here or not?
For operation, there's different challenges. You had to add on extra time. It's interesting because to go between the garage and the paddock, or what we'd call the paddock, but where we have all the team hospitalities, you've got to go through a little public area, so you don't have that kind of sanctity that you would have other places. So you'd have to add on time and make accommodations for doing that. For the guys doing logistics, for building the motorhomes and getting in, you actually have to get in, because if you look where they are, it's such a tiny access to get to a tiny spot. So they have to plan out, okay, which truck goes in first.
Oh, it's a complete jigsaw puzzle, people. It's crazy.
It totally is. So that would mean a big challenge. Red Bull, I know, I don't think they've done it this year because there's been a week between the Barcelona Grand Prix and here. But previously, they've used separate motorhomes so they can have one built up here, because there's not the time to get the big one built stripped down from Barcelona over here and built up in time. So it is a big logistics challenge, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah, fascinating discussion about Monaco. And I know Les Kaiser's just bursting at the seams being out there, and it shows in his enthusiasm in those interviews. But yeah, Andy has been in the business for a long time, and he's love his insights, and we'll continue to have Andy on the show as well. But also, Les ran into our friend of the show, Brendan Hartley, and you know, Brendan Hartley's career, he's been in F1, and he's now still doing some testing in F1, and of course is a World Endurance Car Championship. And he's been a friend of the show. I think I met Brendan Hartley back in 2012 at Circuit of the Americas, and he's a great guy. But Les ran into him and just caught up with him at Monaco just a few minutes. And so let's play that clip with Brendan Hartley.
Hey, there's always fun in the paddock. Good buddy Brendan Hartley's here. How are you, bud?
I'm doing good, yeah.
So where are you going?
I'm about to do a couple of hot laps in a Ferrari 488, I believe. Try and scare a couple of people.
Are you driving for Uber now? What are you doing? Come on, tell us what keeps you busy.
May as well be. I've got a few jobs on the go, so just signed with Toyota for the WEC, which I'm really excited about.
Saw that. Congrats, but we're missing you in Texas, buddy.
Yeah, well, I'll be there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just...
That's all right. Hey, you're popular. We know that.
Well, it's my... You can kind of call this my hometown now, so, yeah. Things are good, mate. I'm still involved in Porsche Formula E development and enjoying my role in Ferrari and the development side, so I've definitely landed on my feet.
Hey, I love it.
I've done that a few times in my life already, and, yeah, things are looking good.
Hey, as long as you get up more than once after falling down.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Brandon. Cheers.
All right, let's go ahead and take a break. You are listening to Speed City. We're in Austin, Texas, and we'll have more after this break. Stay tuned.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride. Or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Hey beer people, it's Christine Sellers.
And I'm Daytona.
Sellers Brewery is back in Austin and brewing again.
Oh, Sellers doesn't ring a bell for some of you?
Well, for the last 17 years, we've been crafting the perfect comeback. We've returned to our roots with Sellers White, a famous local favorite.
Plus, we're creating some fresh new brews.
And whether it's the first time you've tasted our family's legendary beer,
or the millionth,
we're thrilled to be back.
Swing by your local store, watering hole, or our brewery, and let's catch up over beers.
Sellers, Austin's original craft brewery.
Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Gene Haas, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. That's Pink, the music you hear. They're going to be playing Saturday night at the Formula One Grand Prix here in Austin in November.
Always great. I mean, and by the way, in case you're wondering, it does. If you buy a ticket, three-day ticket to Circuit of the Americas, you get free tickets to Imagine Dragons and Pink.
Yeah, not a bad deal. All right, hey, we've got Les Kaiser and Kate Walker out live in Monaco.
We haven't got too long, but I know that you write for a couple of publications in the States. What are you working on? What's coming next out of the Walker brain, that curly-haired brain of yours?
Well, I've just done this weekend some features for New York Times. I did a big piece for Charles for this weekend's NYT special report, and then pieces with the Financial Times, just a season review and a chat about Kubica's recovery. The next piece I got coming up, which I'm actually really excited about, there's two of them. One, I got embedded in the Force India factory for the Barcelona race weekend.
Wow.
So I've got a feature about watching a Grand Prix from the other side and being in their version of mission control. So that was really cool. And then this weekend,
Les, put your pants back on.
Did some interviews with these guys called Mind Maze, who were working with McLaren and Indy and the F1 biometric glove with the data. They're doing this with a balaclava. And so inside the helmet, it's going to read your brain sensors, predict when you're tired, and it's basically the next level. And these guys have got 15 years experience rehabilitating stroke patients, so they really know what they're on about when it comes to neurological stuff. And actually, we're basically looking at 23rd century biometric medical technology hitting not only F1 in the next few years, but Indy, horse riding, NFL, anywhere where there are the potential of concussions and impacts. Like, these guys are turning a corner, and I'm really, really excited about that.
Where can we read that? Because that is something I really want to see.
That's going to be the next New York Times special report, which I think will be the Silverstone weekend.
Great. That is really interesting. I'm so glad you're following that. I've done a little bit of that with Dell in the past, studying biometrics on motorcycle riders. But you're right. This is next step, next gen.
Hey, Les.
And it's really important.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by that. I'm going to watch that or read that. But Les, I want you and Kate to talk about how you how everyone is, it seems like everyone you talk to is excited to hear additional American journalists there, you, with you being there and covering this for us across the United States. So talk about what you, how you've seen it, and get Kate's also to talk to that as well.
You bet. So there's not many American journalists here, and certainly we're the only ones on air broadcast. And this was amazing to me. I mean, open arms. I've been in every team trailer, I think. I've been with so many of the folks higher up in FIA and Formula One. Open arms. They want to reach the American audience. They want to get the American audience up to speed and foster those that are already here. Kate, what do you think? What is your perspective of the way they're looking towards America?
Well, I think, you know, I think obviously we had a bit of a misstep with Miami in that they announced things before we were actually in a position to do anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, we want and need America. You know, we might be losing Mexico. We are probably almost certainly losing Brazil. This Rio thing doesn't really look like it's actually going to go anywhere. I think that's in Miami. So what we need is more interest in America and also more races in your time zone so that we can maintain that interest. And we're now looking at Chicago as being the most likely venue for a second American race, which I think could be really interesting.
Yeah,
Chicago, great town, and it's quite scenic, to be honest, historic as well.
And it could work back-to-back with Montreal in that slot in the calendar, which would be an awful lot nicer than going back-to-back from Montreal to Baku, which is what they want us to do again next year.
You know, I will say one of the things that last time we talked about a second race in the U.S., we didn't want them to be back-to-back because of the opportunity, or we didn't want to rob one to pay the other. And the idea was to have, for instance, Montreal and Texas. And then, you know, at the time that discussion came up, it was New Jersey and Mexico, so that we had them spread apart and you didn't have such close geographic locations back-to-back. What do you think on that?
Well, it's difficult, and because you, on the one hand, yeah, you don't want to split the market. And we saw how Malaysia collapsed once Singapore came onto the calendar, for example. But then at the same time, you've got to think about the cost and the logistics. I mean, we have, I think it's 7 Boeing 747s of freight to every single race. We do an awful lot via sea freight. So if we are able to move things by land where possible, it reduces the environmental impact of the sport. It also reduces the cost of the sport, and teams only get a certain amount of money from the organizers to help pay for their freight. It's they have to make up quite a lot of money themselves. So for the small guys, actually trucking something from Montreal to Chicago is going to help their financial future an awful lot more than flying it off to Mexico and then taking it back to Europe or over to Japan or whatever.
You know,
very true. Logistics.
I think that the person who really figured it all out was Günther Steiner when we had him on the show a couple of weeks ago. He said, how about just have Colton Herta come race in Formula One? And he actually did caveat that by saying, and do well. I think if we had an American driver that did well, that would be more powerful than anything else we could do. So,
oh, absolutely. You need a hometown hero to cheer for.
Yep. Yeah. Well, what's going on outside the balcony at Monaco right this moment? What do you see?
Well, I'm looking out here, and I see Queen Kate's yacht pulling up. So I know she's going to be departing soon.
Hey, listen, Les, you can't be hanging off her coattails. She's an established person at Monaco. Yeah. They know her. Well, they open the door for her.
I'm taking on my busing shift over here at the Cafe de Monte Carlo later. So I got to work off that meal from yesterday.
Well, Raskas is beginning to... one of the funny things here is they sweep the track clean, and the, you know, the corners between swimming pool and Raskas become an open bar. And you know, there's burger stands, there's girls on podiums dancing. You know, it's human traffic like you would not believe. And
where is that
now?
Kate, don't tell him stuff like that. We'll never get him back.
But, But what Les needs to know is that what the cool kids do after the race in Monte Carlo, once we finish doing radio, is we all go down to Stars and Bars,
order
chicken fingers, and watch the Indy 500.
That is exactly what you do. Good on you, Kate.
I'm going to sit right there next to
you. School him. And by the way, Les, I know how generous you are. Buy Kate a water and a beer. That'll be €21. And after that, keep your hand in...
210.
Sorry. Yeah, keep your hand in your pocket. Do not buy everybody in Stars and Bars a drink because you're the American guy there.
I'm going to splurge and get her ice for that water.
Now, my friend paid €65 for a side salad last night.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
At Stars and Bars? Oh, no.
No. That was at the Fairmont.
Okay.
Yeah, the chicken fingers at Stars and Bars are €11. It's why we eat them.
Hey,
there you go. That's about the cheapest you'll get. I think a bottle of fizzy water
that's
is about
Speed
11
City
as
budget,
well.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys.
I'll save my per diem today.
We got to wrap it up. Kate Walker, thank you so much for joining us. Les Kaiser, fantastic job down there today.
Yeah, well done, Les.
Running through the grid, talking to everybody. We appreciate you guys. Y'all go have some fun.
I said, go to those chicken fingers. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Not at all. Anytime, Kate.
Thanks, Kate Walker. All right. Well, we've got about a minute left. We want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Man, what a great show. What a fun show today, doing this with Les and Monaco.
He will be on cloud nine for the next few months. And if the listeners just want to see, you know, kind of, I mean, just keep in touch with our Facebook, Speed City Facebook, because Les is on top of that. He'll be posting, I'm sure, but he'll be on cloud nine for months to come.
Yeah, and I know that, I did give the race a little bit of a hard time, but there was a lot of tension in the race with what was going on at the end there.
Actually, it was a better Monaco than usual. I mean, you know, your expectations are so high. You're a typical American. You want to see overtakes.
I know.
It is almost impossible. And as you saw, Verstappen, I mean, if Verstappen can't overtake.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
You basically had the two best drivers in Formula One going around the toughest circuit in Formula One and not making a mistake. And when one of them did make a mistake, luckily, both of them didn't have to suffer for it.
Yep.
That sums up the weekend for me.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for tuning into Speed City. Check us out on our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. Follow us on social. We do lots of things that you put up on our SoundCloud and all different kind of interviews. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Happy trails.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute. Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. so my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.